Hello, podcast listeners. Jordan River here. Thank you for tuning in to Growcast today. We have a great episode for you today talking about plant patenting and licensing, and it's from a really, really interesting perspective. I know you're going to love what our guest has to say today. Before we jump into today's show, let's give a little love to our sponsor, Greencraft Distribution, everybody. Just go to greencraftdistribution.com, use promo code GROWCAST to get 10% off, and members of mygrowpass.com get 25% off site-wide at Greencraft Distribution, everybody. Greencraft Distribution is a New England-based online hydro store representing several hydroponic brands as well as premium CBD products. Check out greencraftdistribution.com to see the full line of products from brands like Kushly, Canatai, Stash Logix, and so much more. They've got a bunch of nutrients up there. They have containers, fans, odor control. It is an online hydro superstore, everybody. They've got a ton of products, and promo code GROWCAST gets you 10% off. So check it out today at greencraftdistribution.com. And when you're ready to save 25% site-wide, join mygrowpass.com for the exclusive discounts, everybody. All right, let's jump into today's episode. I'm really, really happy about it. Without further ado, thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to Growcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, share Growcast with a friend, please, with a grower, and make sure you're subscribed, give us a rating and review. Check out my new show, the Coffee Health and Science Podcast. We're going to do an expose on glyphosate. It might even be out by the time you're hearing this. I'm not sure. So check that out. And also, of course, Rob Smith's show, The Homegrown Helpers. Got to plug that at the top of the show. Check out all our awesome content that we're putting out. Loving the podcast. And today we have an interesting episode. Apples. That's right, everybody. Apples. We're talking about apples today. Yeah, we're talking about cannabis too. But I was really excited to talk to my guest today who contacted me on Instagram. And we've been going back and forth. And there's some really interesting stuff going on in the apple industry. And has been for quite some years that really could relate to the cannabis industry. So I'm really excited to speak with my apple expert today. JP from Minnesota is on the line. How you doing, JP?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm excellent, man. I'm really, really excellent. I got to tell you, I was like, apples, huh? It's and then I read the story that you sent me, and it was really, really fascinating, man. Maybe we can just start there. Well, let's start with you first. Talk to me about your experience with apples and your experience with growing.
Yeah, well, I'm a third-generation apple grower from Minnesota. I've been pretty deeply involved in the industry for 15 years now. My grandfather and dad have always been kind of a pinnacle in the industry in Minnesota, so that's kind of something that I'm hoping to reach. Dad helped write the IPM manual for growing apples in Minnesota. The late 80s and early 90s. So sustainable agriculture and IPM have been very integrated into our operation from forever.
APM, that's apple pest management. That's the APM.
Yeah,
manual.
There you go.
I
have so many acronyms going through my head right now. Stuff to keep them all straight.
I bet. So this must be exciting for you then, the term IPM just exploding here in the cannabis industry. As an agriculture, you know, participant in agriculture outside of the cannabis industry, are you having, what do you think looking in on the cannabis industry? Like, what are your thoughts?
I think it's fantastic. I think that the cannabis industry, is really at the forefront of technology and agriculture. I personally keep a good eye on it. I think that some of the things that people are doing and developing are going to trickle over into other areas of agriculture. And I think we got to keep a close, watchful eye on it because, you know, we're all working outside. We're all dealing with pests in our own way. Mites are a big pest in apples as well as cannabis. And just watching how you guys manage those is fantastic.
That's really cool, man, because that's kind of what I've been suspecting. I'm hoping that these cannabis soil, regenerative soil guys save the freaking planet, you know, the way we're torturing our soil in this country. You take a look at guys like Joshua Rutherford and, Stephen Reisner and Tad Hussey. These are guys that want to recharge the soil and rejuvenate the topsoil of this country. They're not just looking to get high. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I think it's going to do a lot of good for a lot of people.
Yeah, totally. I mean, they're probably looking to get high too, but that's fine. Let's talk today about apples, man, and specifically the Honeycrisp apple. You sent me this story, and it's funny, you know, anytime there's a name a ubiquitous name like that, there's an interesting story behind it. Why don't you share with my audience the story of the Honeycrisp apple, and then just kind of tie in this whole plant patenting theme that we're going on here?
Right. Well, so the Honeycrisp was released by the University of Minnesota in 1991. It is a variety, Minnesota 1711. So it was the 1700th apple variety that they had come up with and numbered. They patented the genetics in 1991. So they had a 20-year period where it was theirs and theirs alone. And then after that 20-year period, it became public domain. When I do presentations, I refer to Honeycrisp really as the first HD apple. So everything else prior to Honeycrisp was analog. Honeycrisp is now digital. It's the first digital apple. It represented just a massive jump in quality, in the quality of the apple. The consumers just were all over it. It took about 5 to 6 years to really get going. It still demands premium price in the marketplace, you know, almost, 30 years later.
Right. So where does the money go? What happened to the patent? What's happening right now with the Honeycrisp apple?
Well, the patent's off, so the university is not collecting any more royalties on it. Now it's public domain. People can kind of do with as they please. One of the big implications that's going to happen here starting this year is Washington State is going to release the Cosmic Crisp. So Cosmic Crisp is Honeycrisp by Enterprise. It's a new apple that they bred out. Now Cosmic Crisp is going to be trademarked. So trademarks don't expire. So now the university Washington State is going to be collecting royalties on Cosmic Crisp basically forever because trademarks never expire.
Whoa. So every apple you buy, they get a cut?
Yep. Every tree that you plant, they'll get a royalty, and every box that you sell, they'll get a royalty.
Wow.
So yeah, it's crazy. It's a crazy amount of revenue, and it's going to basically happen forever as long as that trademark is active, going back to Washington State. And that's kind of the big miss that the University of Minnesota had on Honeycrisp, is by not trademarking the name when the patent expired. It basically moved into public domain. Now, they were still able to recoup some of that when it went international to New Zealand, Chile, South Africa, things like that. They were able to trademark it overseas, but here in the States, that intellectual property basically vanished when that patent ran out.
Wow. So
yeah.
I want to see how this all lines up with the cannabis industry and what the implications are, because I got to tell you, man, I don't really have like a clear stance on this. I'm really not educated enough to make a call, because I am so for protecting intellectual property, you know what I mean? But also at the same time, trademarking a plant. And I'll tell you, would you also say there's a difference between cannabis and apples, where cannabis is actually like a medicine? I feel like trademarking a medicinal plant is a little bit of a different animal than trademarking a delicious food product. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I think, but at the same time, I think it adds another level of importance when you add that pharmaceutical aspect.
That's
into
also
the equation.
True. Yeah, a level of responsibility.
I think, yeah, there is a level of responsibility, but there's also another level of companies that are going to be entering this industry for that aspect alone.
Yes, that's also true. And with
one
profits
of the things,
in mind.
Yeah. Love the show. I love listening. The breeder episodes are always my favorite, but I gotta be honest. Sometimes I'll be sitting in the truck just screaming at the radio, about the potential of what's happening. I think that, you know, all the cannabis breeders out there right now really need to look at other industries and what has happened in those industries, apples and specifically hops as well. Of what's happened in the hop industry as far as patents and trademarks and all that, and how that all has played out.
Enlighten us. How can we better prepare ourselves? What do you have to warn us from the apple future?
Well, one of the things that I would do if I was a cannabis breeder right now is I would start numbering my selections rather than naming them. I would save all my good names for all my trademarks. So anything that you think is going to be just outstanding, have a lot of market traction, put it in the file and just sit on it for a little while. Number all my selections. I think you can still enter cup contests with a numbered selection, so you could make it, you know, Jordan River, so you could call it JR12 or something along those lines.
Right.
But, you know, save the good names for trademarks. Now, the other thing that is very important is the second that you sell something, either as seed or clone or flower or oil, you have a 1-year period to patent that product. So right now, without federal legalization, if you sell something, that clock is going to start ticking. There's not going to be any amnesty moving backwards when federal legalization happens.
Right.
So people that are dumping awesome stuff out there right now, like Lemon Chunk or Grape Stomper or whatever, you know, the hot new strain is, Wedding Cake, all that stuff that's out there is basically all going to be public domain. And any breeder who wants to start up a program is going to be able to grab that plant material and start with it, rather than, you know, going the 20 years that you've been breeding this in the hills of Northern California or Vermont or wherever. They're going to be able to just start right off the bat with
right.
your best stuff.
Well, tell
you know,
me,
and that,
okay, sorry, did you need to finish your point there?
No, fire away, man.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, I don't know if that's the worst thing in the world. I mean, obviously, you don't want to disincentivize people to breed great strains. That's why you want the intellectual
right.
property, and you want people to profit, so you can incentivize people to take the time to actually go through the work.
Right.
guess the worst case scenario is what? Corporations stepping in and saying, we decide what you can grow. You can only grow our stuff. Stuff like that is the real nightmare scenario, is it not?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the nightmare scenario. I just, as a grower personally, I know that I put a lot of hard work into my crops every single year, and I know everyone else out there does.
Right.
I just feel like everyone's hard work in their breeding program getting pirated right off the bat by someone else. You know, Monsanto gets their name thrown around a lot in this industry, in my industry as well, about kind of being the evil empire. I think when you add that pharmaceutical component to things as well, there's going to be a lot of pharmaceutical companies that are going to come into this and start grabbing up people's genetics and doing their own thing with it.
Right.
I think that people need to be really careful about what's going on. And if you are truly want to combat those big pharma and big A companies, the best way to do it is to patent and trademark your own genetics, because then you can license that material to them and basically make them work for you on your terms.
That's a really good point. This is actually setting up for the future. You don't want to set up a springboard for, you know, some nefarious powers to come in. That's a really good point, man. You said the word
yeah.
licensing. Can you tell me what that would look like? Is that like, you know, the same idea? It's your genetics, but you will let someone else utilize your genetics for a small licensing fee, maybe a percentage or something like that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's really kind of limited to whatever you can dream up. So when you have the patent for a specific plant material, it's yours and yours alone for 20 years. So it's basically a legal monopoly that you have on that product for a 20-year period. You're the only person that could breed with it. So it's really going to ensure the longevity of your breeding program. If you come up with, you know, the next awesome strain and you're the only guy that can breed with it for 20 years, your genetics are going to be, you know, just off the charts for that time. Nobody's going to be really able to touch you.
Right.
You know, it's really for that one in a million, one in a billion strain that just comes out that somebody discovers that's just got an incredible terpene profile or THC or CBDN or whatever. If you're the guy that figures that out, that patent and trademark program is 100% the way to go.
Yeah, that's true. Do you also feel like it might raise the bar, like, all around? Like you said, I feel like only the best strains are going to start floating to the top, either strains with amazing properties, you know?
Yeah, I think it's what we've discovered in our industry is that now that we're kind of through the looking glass as far as proprietary genetics and trademarks go, things are really starting to boil down to regional flavors and preferences. And I think the same thing will happen
You're so right. You're so right. It already is happening.
Yeah. You're going to discover certain demographics of the population like this product. Maybe regionally, you know, they've had blueberry in upstate New York for, you know, 60 years, and that strain's really popular there. So this derivative hybrid blueberry cross is going to do really, really well in that market. But once again, you know, if you're able to kind of latch on and have the product and enter that market space and have it patented and trademarked, you're going to be able to, you know, work that on your terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. My Michigan growers smoking and growing Tangy out there. It's like the flavor of the state. All that purple weed in Northern California. Oh yeah, that's my favorite, buddy. That's a really good point, though. I never really put that together. Regional, you know, preferences, regional taste preferences. That's really cool. Okay, everyone, before we jump back in with JP, let's give a little love to today's sponsor, Sweet Leaf Plant Nutrients, everybody, a premium plant nutrient line made in the US of A and sponsored by Danny Danko himself. Sweetleaf.com, SUITE leaf.com, promo code GROWCAST15 gets you 15% off. And members of MyGrowPass.com get 25% off their nutrients. Incredible, everybody. Sweet Leaf Plant Nutrients. These guys are great. Check out their award-winning CalMag amendment. It is one of the best CalMag amendments on the market, from what I understand, and it has won multiple awards. So check it out, sweetleaf.com. Check out the CalMag. Check out the whole line. Promo code GROWCAST15 for 15% off. And when you're ready to save 25% on your Sweet Leaf nutrients, MyGrowPass.com. All right, everybody, let's get back to the show.
So Gorst Valley Hops in central Wisconsin was able to trademark Chinook public domain hop as Skyrocket because they were able to prove that it had a quantifiable difference when it was grown in their microclimate. So it's possible to trademark a public domain plant material if you can quantify that it is, you know, different because of how you're growing it.
Whoa, that's nuts.
So you could think of somebody growing Granddaddy Perps organically in Northern California. If they found that certain terpene levels were higher or lower or just flat out different, they could get a trademark for a public domain plant material in that environment because it is different.
That makes
sense. And then
once again,
you can charge royalties on it.
I don't know, like, if I agree
to control that.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you can just kind of, the trademark's never going to expire. You're going to keep your royalties forever.
That's so crazy. I don't know if I agree, like, with the moralities or whatever of it, but that makes perfect sense with what I've learned about some of the theories we've talked about on genetic drift on this show, cloning cannabis and people talking about genetic drift. One of the theories that was proposed was you can actually kind of wear out the genetics by the way you're growing it. Not the fact that you keep cloning it, but the fact that you're not introducing enough microbiology and enough diverse organic stimulants into the line to keep the biology virile and strong. You know what I mean?
Right.
Virile? Is that the word, or does that mean like horny? Oh, no, sorry. Go on. Get what? Hit me.
Urology, I think, is something penis related, isn't it?
I said virile, but go on. You were about to make a point before I cut you off.
So now there's a legal precedent about what you can trademark and like where it's from. So what the University of Minnesota did when they released their next new apple, in 2015, they released MN55. So MN55 is a patented plant material, and now this plant material is going to carry two trademarks. So any apple off an MM55 tree grown in Minnesota will be known as First Kiss. Any apple grown on an MM55 tree outside the state of Minnesota is going to be known as Rave. So you have the same tree, the same plant material with two separate trademarks based on where it's grown.
That's crazy. This is getting super complicated.
Right? Yeah, super complicated. Super convoluted, but 100% accurate. When you talk about just the different flavors and profiles of the fruit when they're grown in different regions across the U.S., completely different. If you talk about like Honeycrisp grown in Washington State versus Honeycrisp grown in Minnesota, it's almost like two separate apples.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, and it's, yeah, it's literally absurd. And I'm sure, you know, once a $50 billion cannabis industry comes into this realm of patented genetics and trademarking, there's going to be, you know, even more stuff like this that's happening.
Totally. Yeah.
There's a lot of stipulations on some of these patents and contracts that people are basically voiding right now by selling seeds or entering cups, you know, entering the cup contest. I don't know if they're getting compensated for that, but it's like anytime you're compensated for said plant material, the 1 year timeline starts ticking.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And then it's
basically
public, and then it's public domain after that. And then, like, you know, if I was that dark horse and I'm the guy that bred Bruce Banner or the new one that he's got coming out, like Solomon Grundy or whatever, and he sold that to whatever one shop, he did one seed drop or sold a clone to a buddy for $5, and there was a physical record of it, and for whatever reason that voided your patentability and trademarking ability, and whatever pharma company comes in and snatches it up, I mean, that kind of pissed me off.
That's bad news right there, man. That's bad news.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, and like I said before, I think it should be free for anyone. I think that people should be able to grow this on their deck at their house, grow your own CBD at your house. But, you know, there's trillion-dollar companies that are going to get in there and just drown out the small growers. And this is the best way for people to stay alive.
So what else, let me ask you this, what should we as growers, as breeders be doing? I mean, like you said, obviously patenting, you gave some good advice on, you know, saving the names. Do you have any other advice on the kind of the mind state that we should have moving forward as this develops?
Yeah, I think that you always got to have your eye on your stuff, looking for that super unique strain. It doesn't need to be, you know, 40% THC or something ridiculous like that. It just needs to be unique enough to fit a certain demographic or regional area. So it doesn't need to be like the crazy lights out home run strain. I think that people that are putting genetics out on the open market right now, it's all destined to be public domain. And when you do that, I think it's basically like tearing up a lottery ticket before the drawing even happens.
True. Okay, I agree with that. But don't you also agree that it's also really lucrative right now because of those same parameters?
Absolutely. You know, I think people have businesses they got to run. I get that. You know, my family's subject to agricultural income as well. And, you know, people have to sell their products and they got to make money. I just want people to realize that in the next couple of years, there's going to be a fantastic mode for them to protect their intellectual property and their plants and all their hard work. And I think that you got to have your eye on the future in that aspect.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm not really offering a counterpoint. I guess I'm saying it dawned on me that the same reasons that all of this is still up in the air, you know, it's all a result of this transitional period, and that's what also makes it super lucrative. So I think that's why there's not a lot of complaining. I think that if a bushel of cannabis sold for the same amount as a bushel of apples, there would be a different story. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that it's definitely on their way there. And I think that if you look at that, what's happened in the hop industry in the last 20 years, I think that that is kind of giving the precursor. I read a report the other day that said that 57% of the sales this year are going to be patented or trademarked genetics. Wow. So they're already starting to really corner that marketplace. And anything that's basically public domain is going to become a commodity. And it's going to be subject to commodity prices where people can get out there and start undercutting each other. When you're dealing with trademarks and patents and plant material, you're really controlling the price through the industry by controlling the supply.
Mm. As a farmer, you know, yourself, what do you think of this whole oversupply of CBD? Do you think this is going to be a challenge?
I think that there's a lot of people in the row crop industry right now that are looking really, really hard at hemp. because corn and soybean prices have been so bad, especially with the tariffs and trade war and all those things that have been happening. Agricultural and climate change is not getting any easier.
Mm.
And I think that people are definitely looking for more lucrative systems.
Absolutely. So I maybe should have set that up better. I just read an article that was saying that, you know, everyone is switching to hemp, you know, a bit of an exaggeration, but you know what I'm saying? There's a huge wave of hemp farmers coming, and there's going to be a violent crash. That's what the title of the article was, due to an oversupply.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's likely?
I know not.
What have you seen in Minnesota?
Well, so they launched the Minnesota hemp pilot program in 2018. They had a meeting at the Department of Agriculture, and they had a room set up for about 45 people, and I think almost 400 showed up.
Oh, that explains
it.
That's a good indicator.
Yeah, so yeah. I think that'll give you a pretty good indication on what's going on with that industry. Yeah, for sure.
That's wild, man.
Yeah, it's something else, really.
So do you think those reports are going to be accurate? You think there's going to be a big crash coming here? And an oversupply of hemp will definitely mean an oversupply of CBD. Obviously, the psychoactive market is going to be untouched by this oversupply of hemp. But do you think there's a crash coming?
Mm-hmm. Man, it's tough to predict something like that. I definitely think that there's a heck of a lot of production. I know a couple of hemp farmers in Minnesota, and everyone is ramping up production. Some guys are going to double their acreage in the next couple of years.
Damn.
People are really excited about it.
Ramping up consumption too, though. So we'll see.
Yeah. I don't want to be Chicken Little and say the sky is falling. But there's definitely going to be more people in the industry. And once again, I would also look for proprietary genetics to start moving out of that industry, you know, pretty rapidly.
100%, man. Yeah. Imagine the different varietals that they'll be trying to get with farming hemp. You got to keep those levels just right. You want all the good stuff and none of that THC. So that's going to mean some really specific breeding, and there's probably some people working on hemp breeding right now. I would love to, we should do a hemp month on Growcast. Yeah. Listeners, if you're breeding hemp and you're listening to this and your ears are perking up, write me, at Growcast, get at the show, or write me personally at Jordan River IG, both on Instagram. Okay, man, what else do you have to say about patenting and licensing before I have a couple questions about Minnesota cannabis, before we sign off, but do you have any other thoughts you'd like to share about patents?
Yeah, I just, it's royalties in agriculture. It's kind of like the new wave, you know, whenever you can get something out there going that's yours, you're going to do it on your terms. You're going to be able to say, you know, I want, anytime you take a clone of my strain, I want a dollar. Any pound that you sell, I want, you know, 8% of your sale price per pound. You can license the growers that you want. You can restrict it from the growers that you don't want. You're going to control everything there is to control about it. And I think that is really the longevity of people's breeding programs. And that's really what's going to help people stay in that kind of craft marketplace and not get drowned out in just the mass of commercial agriculture.
Yeah. And that makes sense too, you know, I don't know. I guess I got to tell you, this is a culture. This is being born out of a culture that is based upon things like charity and benevolence and giving things out for free. You know what I mean? It's funny because the agricultural market is a very black and white market. It's like, no, man, like this is a hard life being a farmer, especially when your prices are going to drop to a more reasonable price. And, you got to learn the ropes, kind of like the harsh realities sort of thing is what you're saying. Is that a little bit of what you're saying? Don't let me put words in your mouth.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that. I think that, you know,
this is how we survive. We have to retain control,
yeah,
right?
This is how you're going to survive. Yeah. You know, you got to watch out for yourself, you know, and there's going to be some little grower out there that's going to create this magic strain, and they need to handle it properly from the start. Mm-hmm. And then you can, like I said, you can make Big Ag and Big Pharma work for you, you know, right. Make them sign the royalty deal, make them sign the contract, take their money, and then start a foundation. do whatever you want, you know, disperse it however you want it to be dispersed.
But yeah, you're speaking my language.
Make
I like
them
it.
Work for you and take their money,
yeah,
you know?
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, if that's what it takes to retain power at the level of the breeders and the growers where it belongs, I definitely see the benefit in that. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
I like it, man. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm right there with that culture. I think it all should be free. I think it should all be open. But you know, there's people in those huge industries that don't share those values.
Oh, 100%. And listen, it's a balance. It's always a balance. It's a balance between being benevolent and also fair compensation and incentivization and some deeper issues as well. What the tipping point is for me is what you're saying, which is if we don't protect ourselves and kind of beat them to the punch, we could get steamrolled by powers that are maybe a little bit more, let's say way more nefarious. If you look at their history, you know, their track record, that is kind of the tipping point where it's like, yeah, maybe we do need to have this preemptive strike and, you know, throw the first punch, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a lot of the, you know, smaller growers and breeders right now have a heck of an advantage. You know, you've got a big head start on a lot of people. If it goes federally legal, there's going to be huge companies that they'll make a cross and they'll run off 50,000 phenos.
Right.
You know, they'll have a huge DNA marker assisted breeding program.
Totally.
They'll put every aspect of science, you know, they'll put $1 billion at it. And
totally.
And then where's it going to go? And I think that you need to be on board now with the licensing and everything moving forward just to kind of protect yourself and protect your revenue streams.
I love it, man. Okay. That was very concise. This was a very strong episode. Before we wrap it up, though, what's going up there? What's going on in Minnesota? What's the cannabis laws like? What's the cannabis culture like? I know, you know, the Midwest, if I may comment on my upbringing, definitely underrated when it comes to closet stoners. We historically have not had the best laws, but if you know all these people and you really know them, there's a lot of pot smokers. What's going on up in Minnesota?
Well, we got a really strong medical program right now.
Oh, you do? I didn't know
companies.
That.
Yep. We're medical legal. They're putting out a couple more licenses, I think, this year. I think there's going to be three more licenses that get released this year. There was an op-ed piece in Minneapolis paper from the leader of the House that basically said, you know, with Illinois and Michigan legalizing, it's our turn now.
Yeah, man. You know, I was thinking about Wisconsin.
That's it. So
Wisconsin
kind of
is
like
surrounded.
Another, yeah, Wisconsin, they're going to be in trouble. but I think that, you know, it's kind of on the table. I've heard rumblings that the governor's willing to sign it if it comes to his desk. So based on that, I think that people are willing to work on it and talk about it a little bit more.
Woohoo! That's awesome, man. Yeah.
So for sure. But yeah, I definitely agree with the closet stoner aspect for sure. You know,
lots of smokers up there. They're not wearing their hair long and reeking out in public. But yeah, a lot of like hardworking pot smokers who smoke a cigarette after to cover it up, I've found. But yeah, I've heard really great things about like St. Paul, you know, kind of like blowing up. One of the hot cities to move to. So I don't know. I'm interested in Minnesota, man. Maybe I'll take a trip up there once you guys recreationalize, do a little growcast travel show or something. Yeah.
Hey, man, that's a good idea. Yeah, growcast on the road. I like it.
Yeah. We've done it a couple times, but I need to do it more. So yeah, man.
Yeah,
good.
You get a Winnebago. And
yeah, fucking right. You don't know how actually close we are to that. Producer Ben has a pimped out van, so stay tuned at Growcast on Instagram, guys. Things are going to get crazy in 2020. Yeah, man, fantastic. Best of luck up there in Minnesota. Sure hope you legalize soon. JP, any final words before we sign off there? A neighbor from the north?
No, I should have wrote something down on my notes for sure, though. Just everybody. But I just want everybody to, you know, keep doing what you're doing, keep keeping on, and
be safe and grow smarter? Is that what you're trying to say?
Be safe and grow smarter, yeah.
You nailed it.
That's it.
Awesome, man. Thank you for taking the time to do this, man. Everyone listening at Growcast on Instagram, is like the third time I've said it. Do you have an Instagram you want to give out? Anything you want to promote before we sign off? Apples?
Yeah. Everybody eat an apple a day. You can find me at JPMNApples on Instagram.
Awesome. Awesome, everybody. You know what to do. Check out mygrowpass.com. We're killing it over there. We gave away the $5,000 in prizes October 1st. That was awesome. So check that out, everybody. Thank you all so much for listening. This is JP from Minnesota and Jordan River signing off, both saying be safe and grow smarter.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. A little housekeeping at the end of the show. Check out our new merch at growcastpodcast.com. Click the merch button, see what we got going on there. Shout out to Start to Finish Consulting. That's Start to Finish, the number 2710 on Instagram. Listen, I try to answer as many of your guys' questions as I can, but stuff has been getting crazy lately. I'm sorry if I haven't been responding. Start to Finish is a great source to go to. If you need some help, everybody, check them out. Let's see. Shout out to Jay Blanked on this beat for doing the ad music. Find him on SoundCloud at Jay Blanked. And yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Love you all. Best of luck in your grows. Happy growing, everyone.